In the 1950s, as evidence mounted that smoking caused cancer, tobacco companies launched an aggressive campaign in defense of their product. They tried to undermine studies that showed cigarettes were unhealthy. They did their own phony research that highlighted smokers without disease. It was one of the most dishonest PR offensives ever, and one you might think not likely to be repeated. Well, according to our next guest, it has been repeated again and again. Today, the business of product defense is alive and well, fighting to muddy the data on the safety of everything from prescription drugs to plastic baby bottles. This business of manufacturing uncertainty is described in a new book by David Michaels called Doubt Is Their Product. He's an epidemiologist and former Assistant Secretary of Energy. David Michaels, welcome.
Hi, Faith. Nice to be here.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here. So let's start with the title of your book, Doubt Is Their Product, which you borrowed from an old tobacco industry memo declaring war on the notion that smoking might cause cancer. Here's the line. Doubt is our product, since it is the best means of competing with the body of fact that exists in the minds of the general public. It is also the means of establishing a controversy. That's so devilish, it makes me want to smoke a cigarette.
It's breathtaking.
And the book, your book, is about how this strategy is being replicated now by lots of people in business and industry. You call them mercenary scientists.
That's right. It's being replicated because it works. The scientists paid by the big oil and coal companies who've worked on global warming, scientists working for chemical companies, they've realized that if we can fight over the science, we don't have to think about the policy, what to do about these harmful effects of these chemicals.
So these people are paid to...
They're paid lots of money, essentially, to create doubt. They don't have to show a chemical safe, for example. They just have to show the studies that say it's dangerous are in question. And by raising enough doubt, the government and the agencies that would try to protect Americans can't move forward because it looks like there's conflicting studies.
Give me an example. How much is a person like this paid?
I've seen middle-level people in these companies making $800,000 a year. And the owners of the companies, I'm sure, do very much better.
Did you talk to any of these people?
I've met them at meetings, things like that. You know, they stay away from me.
Scare them away?
Well, it raises an interesting question. You know, how do they sleep at night is what everybody asks me.
Right.
And I think they convince themselves that they're doing the right thing, that even the tobacco people said it can't really be true, and we're going to essentially show that it's not true.
Let's look at a specific example of this doubt sowing that's in the headlines right now. It's about this chemical called bisphenol A?
That's right, bisphenol A.
Yeah, and it's used in a lot of plastics. It's in baby bottles and plastic food containers and the lining of canned foods.
That's right, and we're all exposed to it.
Yeah, okay. Tell me a bit more about this stuff and the controversy.
Well, this is a multi-billion dollar chemical. We've known since the 1940s it's an estrogen. It's very much like diethylstilbestrol, which is an estrogen that was used medicinally for a long time. The chemical industry has a big stake in showing that it doesn't have any effects because it's used so widely. A number of scientists have shown that it has estrogenic effects, in other words, effects on reproduction, on development, in lab animals at very low levels. We don't have any evidence in humans, but we can't test it on humans. We're all exposed, though, at low levels. In fact, it's found in 90% of the people in the United States in their urine. So we know we're all exposed.
Okay, so right in the middle of this is one of these firms that sows doubt for money. Will you talk about the Weinberg Group?
Sure. The Weinberg Group is just one of the many groups. We know a lot about them because they did a lot of work for tobacco, and all the documents that were in the tobacco industry's possession are now public because of all the lawsuits. And the tobacco industry hired the Weinberg Group over the 1970s and 80s, essentially to find scientists to front for them, to go in front of the public, in front of TV cameras, and say tobacco is safe. Now what they do for a lot of different chemical companies is they go out and defend the products they're hired to defend. In this case, they go and say bisphenol A is really not dangerous, and they'll bring scientists and say, we've looked at the data and there's nothing there. Unfortunately, if you talk to the scientists not associated with the chemical industry, the vast majority see there's something there. We don't know exactly how bad it is, but why should we be exposing our kids to these chemicals if there could be some danger?
So to what data do these type of scientists point? Presumably, they do some kind of experiments. Are they real?
No, often they don't. What's interesting is they often, one of the tricks all these scientists do, and I talk about this in my book, Doubt Is Their Product, a lot, they'll get the raw data of studies done by government scientists, and they'll reanalyze it and say, well, if you look at it this way, the results go away. And that's a trick they use over and over again. So they don't often do their own studies. Now, in the bisphenol A example, the chemical industry has paid for 11 studies, none of which show an effect, but there are dozens and dozens, well over 100 studies paid for by the government that do show an effect. And so the fight is over which studies do you use?
I'm just going to ask the facile question that's lying out there. How can anyone justify potentially endangering the health of babies, right? We're talking babies now, not adults who choose to smoke.
That's right. And I'll take that as a rhetorical question. I can't answer it, obviously.
That's your next book. It'll be a psychological study, right?
Well, that is the question.
I mean,
and I wish I could answer it. But it's interesting. If you look at Vioxx, that's another thing I talk about. If you go back and look at the evidence from before even Vioxx was licensed by the Food and Drug Administration, it's very clear it caused heart attacks. Yet very well-known scientists in the pay of the Merck Pharmaceutical Company looked at these data and said, no, it doesn't really look like there's an effect. Eventually, it became so clear that it had to be pulled from the market. The estimates are now it caused somewhere between 88 and 140,000 heart attacks in the United States. And the data were there.
That's significant. That's not a statistical random aberration.
No.
After doing the research for this book, did you feel like, doesn't the Chinese government execute people right and left for this kind of thing? Did you start thinking maybe they had the right idea?
Well, you know, I was reminded of a quote by Lily Tomlin. No matter how cynical you get, you can't keep up.
Why does it seem like the FDA is not doing its job here?
Well, I think the food division of the FDA is really in the pocket of the industry. They've been captured by the people they're supposed to regulate. And it really needs some change in leadership at the top.
I have a fact written in front of me right here. Drug companies conduct 70% of all clinical drug studies and pay half of the FDA's operating budget?
They do. Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing in that the government says,
why?
If you want your drug license, there's a user fee. You have to send money in with it. The problem is the FDA has always essentially said, well, you're paying our bills. We'll have to look to you for some advice and direction. They should be decoupled, but Congress won't give enough money and the administration never asks for enough money for the FDA to operate independently.
All right. So hearing this, that despite years of studies implicating BPA in health problems, and it's still in the most plastic baby bottles, how are consumers not supposed to get paranoid? I mean, if some common plastics may be unsafe, why should I believe diet sodas are safe or drinking water?
Well, in the book, I call for something called Sarbanes-Oxley for Science. You know, Sarbanes-Oxley was the legislation that was passed after the Enron WorldCom debacle when the Arthur Andersen company essentially cooked the books of these companies. And some people made a lot of money and many thousands of other people lost their pensions and their savings. Arthur Andersen went bankrupt doing this. We have scientists whose work has the same relationship to science as the Arthur Andersen company did to accounting and their work for Enron. Essentially, they cook the books so companies can skirt the law. Congress passed a law called Sarbanes-Oxley, which says now the companies have to give honest information and the people at the top have to sign off that it's all true. And we have to make it more transparent. We should be moving in that direction for science as well, because you can't trust people who have a financial interest in the outcome of the science. Companies are always going to say a chemical safe because it's not in their interest to say it's dangerous. And so we need people who are independent of the people paying the bills, essentially, to evaluate these chemicals.
Let's talk a little bit about global warming. I mean, here's a scientific consensus that's basically predicting the apocalypse. The sky is falling, and it's hard not to be skeptical about predictions like that. You almost want to be.
You're certainly condemned to hope. You certainly want it to be wrong. On the other hand, we know we better start doing something now to make sure it doesn't happen. And it's actually what's terrible about this. A lot of the same scientists who were defending tobacco 20 years ago actually are defending the climate change deniers. It's the same folks. It's the same strategy. In fact, there's a memo from Frank Luntz, who's a Republican political consultant, that says the only way we're going to win the debate over global warming is to convince voters that there's scientific uncertainty. Once they think that this uncertainty is over and the science is clear, they're going to demand action.
Does certainty ever exist in science?
No, and that's the point. The point is we have to make decisions on the basis of the best available evidence. We're never sure. We don't know that BPA causes harm in our children, but we certainly don't want to risk it in this case. And there's enough evidence that we should do something. The same is true for global warming. We can't wait for certainty because that would stop us from moving forward.
It's interesting to me that there's some major statistic that like 98% of Americans believe in God, right? Like on some things we're willing to, you don't want to die and find out there's you know,
right.
We'd rather accept faith in that. But when it comes to science, people, I guess, are relieved to think, well, there might be doubt about this, so I'll keep drinking out of this bottle.
And the public relations people understand that people think science should give them certainty. And because it can't, especially because we can't test these chemicals on people, we can't predict the future with absolute accuracy, there's always going to be uncertainty. And so by playing up this uncertainty, companies can keep doing what they're doing, making dangerous products, polluting the earth, and not be stopped.
David, we have about a minute left, but I really want to know how you got interested in studying doubt. Were you alarmed by the industry, or was this more of a philosophical thing?
Well, no, I was alarmed. Actually, during the Clinton administration, I was in charge of protecting the health and safety of workers, the environment, and the communities around the nuclear weapons complex, around our most dangerous facilities. I was a regulator, and I would receive this testimony and these reports from companies that were making dangerous products that we were using, and I just didn't believe them. Other people, essentially, in my office said, well, that's just company A, company B. We know that they're lying. To me, it was deviant behavior, and we need to deal with it. We need to talk about it, because in the scientific community, everyone knows it's there. But outside of that, we don't talk about it. So I put up a website called doubtistheirproduct.com that has a lot of this information on it. It has a lot of these smoking gun documents that I've uncovered and collected over the last few years, so people can see exactly what the strategy is and how it's working.
I know you're a science-minded guy, but do you have any pet paranoias? Like, you do know that Pop Rocks and Coke will blow your head off, right? You know that.
Well, my family gives me a hard time because for years, whenever we make microwave popcorn home, I open it under the fan on the stove.
Oh, that stuff's supposed to be really bad.
Well, it is, because
right?
I've been seeing this for years. I've been writing about for 5 years how dangerous it is, and they kept kidding me and saying, "Oh, Dad, you're out of your mind." And now, of course, we recommend everybody do that.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Will you call your next book Faith?
After you, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll write you an awesome blurb on the back, okay?
That would be terrific. Thanks, Faith.
Sure. David Michaels is an epidemiologist at George Washington University and author of the new book, Doubt is Their Product, How Industry's Assault on Science Threatens Your Health. For more about him, please visit our website, morefairgame.org.